RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. But, you know, this ain't no talk show. Just call it like it is. Welcome to the Suicide Squad episode. So, you know, last week Arrow made us a promise, and I'm going to say I don't think they really delivered on it this week.
You don't think they fulfilled their promise?
I do not.
Jeez.
I had high hopes for the Suicide Squad episode, and I think there was some great stuff going on in parts of the episode. But I cannot recall an episode of late, at least in season two, that raised so many questions with me just as a fan. Not questions about, hey, what's going to happen to these characters, but like, wait a second, didn't they like walk through the other door when they came in the door? And, you know, weird, you know, just things that took me out of the episode like that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with you.
There were tons of good stuff that I loved. But altogether as a whole, I'd say one of the weaker ones of the season.
There have been so many episodes this season, right? We'll get into a second, but the 16th episode of the season. I want to say this is probably my least favorite episode, but there may be some others that I didn't like quite as much, because this is something that we've been waiting for a long time. I mean, this has been teased, you know, since we first started seeing some of these villains back in season one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that has been anticipated by fans, and maybe that's part of the problem that I'm having, is that I was anticipating it so much, it just couldn't live up to what I thought it should be. But,
well,
I don't know.
Yeah, and as my little introduction to that, it's hard for me to compare them to the other episodes of the season because it felt so different. It almost felt to me like they were teasing an idea for a whole other show. Like they did with The Flash, you know?
It kind of was like one of those, you know, they were trying to do a spinoff. It's, you know, it's like when Facts of Life Girls came on to Different Strokes. And, well, you know, not really, but, you know, kind of.
And they all had masks and they fought crime.
Well, Mrs. Garrett, I mean, she, you know, she's the leader of this group of people, you know,
yep,
that they go out and they do crazy things. You know, they had the girl on the roller skates and all that. So
it's like a different world. Okay, that was
nice.
Really, really bad 80s.
And then you
reference.
Can have some Jell-O pudding and everything, you know.
So. I think they deliberately sent her off to college.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, I think we're getting off track a little bit. We got a huge NBC tangent there.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, back to CW here with Arrow. Well, why don't you go ahead and give us the stats about this week's episode?
Well, here's a lowdown of this week's, and then we have lots of stuff to talk. So, as you said, Season 2, Episode 16, Suicide Squad. Now, this originally aired March 19th, 2014, written by Kito Shimizu.
Very good.
That is a cool name.
That is a
and
cool name.
And Brian Q. Miller.
Well, which is also a cool name.
Yeah. Brian Q. Miller, it sounds like someone that would, you know, produce a show in the 70s. A Brian Q. Miller production.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Okay, wow. References tonight galore. Sorry, I have been reading Ready Player One. Oh, you got to excuse me on that.
a great 80s kind of book, too. So recommend that to anybody out there. Ready Player One,
yes,
by Ernie Klein.
For sure. All right, back on track. I'll stay focused. It was directed by Larry Tang. Am I saying that right? It's Tang or Tang?
Tang? Tang, I believe.
Tang.
Not quite Tang, kind of a Tang.
Okay, well, the names were challenging me tonight. I'm sorry. I've got a bit of a cold, but we're gonna get through this. All right.
All right.
So here's what we've got. In 2014, A crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they probably did commit. Today, now surgically tracked by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the Suicide Squad. And now, Amanda Waller wants Diggle and his ex-wife slash current lover slash former military comrade, Lila, to help lead this team of miscreants and track down a terrorist. But, you know, Diggle's not really sure he's comfortable with some of the ethics involved. And in Act Two. This is my boss, Oliver Queen, a self-made millionaire. He's quite a guy. This is Amanda Waller. She's gorgeous. She's one lady who knows how to take care of herself. By the way, my name is Diggle. I take care of both of them, which ain't easy, because when they met, it was murder. So I said I was getting off the 80s.
Yeah, you got a little something there.
Sorry about that. Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, meanwhile, Oliver, he's going on a desperate, tiring, alienating solo quest for Deathstroke, only to realize that he cannot do it alone.
Wow. So, I mean, like, I'm just realizing pretty much all we're doing is talking about and making reference to stuff from the 80s today. This is crazy. I'm wondering how many more things we get for the rest of the show.
You know, now after just going through that, I can kind of think of how this really kind of fit that template of an 80s action show.
It kind of did. Yeah, there was that feel to it, I guess. So, you know, maybe that's appropriate. I mean, of course, that's, you know.
Well, that might have been part of the problem, too, to be honest.
It could have been. It did feel different than other episodes, which is why you said, you know, it sounded like, or it felt like a spinoff, you know, that they were trying out something. And, you know, maybe they were as well, because I think they obviously have set this up for this group or a group similar to this, because it may not all be the same people, you know, to come back in a future episode. So, well, let's take a quick break here and just talk a little bit of news and stuff. There is a new book from executive producer Mark Guggenheim, and it is called Overwatch. And it just came out. It is due to come out here in the middle of April. You can go ahead and pre-order it on Amazon for $19.14, and it is about a young CIA lawyer who uncovers a dangerous worldwide conspiracy masterminded by forces within the U.S. intelligence community. Sounds kind of interesting. I don't know if you would. I don't know if they have any chapter excerpts that you had taken a look at, but you kind of brought this to my attention.
Yeah, and Mark Guggenheim tweeted about it the other day, and I didn't even realize it was coming. So it sounds really interesting, and it's the lawyer's name is Alex Garnett, but I don't really know too much about the book other than what the overview kind of gives. Mm-hmm. But it sounds kind of cool. It's who is it? Is it who writes all those
Tom Clancy?
Those lawyer, is it Tom Clancy?
Oh, the lawyer books. Yeah, hang on. Maybe my wife's got some on the shelf that I can see here. I don't. Grisham.
Yeah. Grisham. Yeah. So that's kind of what it sounds like. You know, there's a conspiracy involved, and he starts to unravel some of this stuff. And anyway, it sounds good. I didn't realize Mark Guggenheim was a novel writer, and I think actually this may be his very first book like this.
You can't handle the truth, Josh.
I can't. Yeah. So,
that's true.
Well,
I did not
let you know.
Yeah, I did not know that he wrote any books. I mean, I know he's written in comics.
Sure.
But yeah, I hadn't known he had written any novels. So that's pretty cool. It sounds really interesting. I mean, I'm not one to pick up a lot of non-genre books like Star Wars. you know, or comic related books and things like that. My wife has, you know, usually gets that kind of stuff, but this looks like something that she might enjoy as well, because she does like some of those mystery and you know, it's kind of seems like an espionage style story as well, given the kind of the way the cover's designed and stuff. So,
well, I got summer coming up. When we go on summer break, as a teacher, I got lots of time to read and listen to audiobooks both. So, I'm
Well, cool. Maybe we can, maybe we can do an episode on that just to give people a sense of what it's about.
Cool. Cool idea. Yeah.
And then the other news we got more specifically back to Arrow is that we are going to be getting a couple of special guest stars from the new Flash series showing up in about 3 or 4 episodes, I think. I'm not in one episode, about 3 or 4 episodes from now. So it's people they've cast that will be in the Flash pilot and presumably series. I mean, I know it's happening, right? They're shooting the pilot. I can't imagine this is not going to get picked up, especially with all the other comic book shows that are coming out next next season. There's 2 others, at least, that are being worked on as for pilots, one being the Gotham show, which may not be as bad as it originally sounded. And then there's also, I don't know. I keep
You're not making their commercial for them, are you?
No, I'm
not as bad as you thought it was going to be.
I based on stuff I've heard, I'm... You know, we say we're cautiously optimistic about stuff. What's like the exact opposite of that? I am like certain this thing's going to tank, but we'll see. And then there's a John Constantine show, which is based on Hellblazer, which is also a DC property that's going to be on. I think that one's on NBC, and the Gotham show is going to be on Fox.
I think that's right.
Should be pretty cool. So we got
the Flash one. It sounds like they're setting up for some permanent. filming. So, I mean, with everything they've put into it and the huge social media popularity of the Flash stuff they've been teasing us with, like the costume and stuff.
Yeah.
I would say, that they'll all be back. Now, well, they might have a Russian maid, like at the police station where he works, and she'll only be in the pilot. That's it. But after that, she's out. She's got to go to Gotham and get a job.
Yeah. Well, I just with the high confidence that CW put behind this and told, the producers here, hey, you guys can have your own pilot. You don't have to use an episode of Arrow to pilot the show, which is great. So they're I think they're going to use that the episode of Arrow that they were going to pilot the Flash on and do some other Flash related stuff, but not the Flash per se. But we'll see. Who knows that. They could, right in the last couple seconds, sneak him in there, which I think would be really cool.
Yeah, I'll be all right. And hey, a couple seconds, Flash can do a lot in a couple seconds.
Oh, I know. A couple seconds of the Flash. I mean, that's like an entire episode for him. So, all right. So we are here tonight to talk about the Suicide Squad, where, last week with The Promise, we discussed all sorts of cool things about the title. So Suicide Squad, that's the group that gets formed here by Amanda Waller.
Yes, it is, but there's some other stuff in there too.
So there is some other stuff.
But to make your point, I agree. I like when the title is a little bit more abstract, than it can you can interpret it in a lot of different ways. And this is straight up pretty much what it is, so
right.
But there really were some other kind of themes running through, smaller themes running through about that.
Yeah, there is. Well, first off, just to say about Task Force X, aka the Suicide Squad, Michael Rowe, he really steals the entire episode here. Deadshot, I think by leaps and bounds, was the probably the second best character. I love seeing Diggle. I thought it was great. I thought Diggle had a great arc, and he really grew as a character. And I know you and I have been talking about, let's give him more to do. And this episode really did that. It gave David Ramsey time to, grow as the character and show us all sorts of different things from him. But Michael Rowe is... Deadshot was just, he was funny. He had great lines. He was just delicious as this kind of foil for Diggle. I'm glad that he did not die way back when, and that there's a chance for us to see more of him. I would love to see him in a spinoff series. I mean, that you know, that's how much I enjoyed what he was doing.
Nice, nice. Well, it is an interesting character. So would you say he really hit the target?
He did.
He was dead on?
Dead on. Yep.
Okay, I'm done. All right,
so that's it.
I agree with you there. I really do agree with Diggle. And actually, I was pleased with where that character went and continued to go. The slight thing at the end that kind of torqued me a little bit, but nothing I couldn't look over. I thought he did a great job. So, please give him more to do with Oliver. I like when he works with Oliver. They have really good banter. Mm-hmm. At least they did, you know, back when they were doing things together.
Right, right. So
it's like Yoko came in, put on a mask, and now where's Diggle?
Exactly, exactly. Breaking up the band, man.
That's more of a 70s reference, I think.
Well, some other Suicide Squad kind of reference that that I was seeing here was pretty much like Oliver's mission, right?
His mission to find Deathstroke.
To find Deathstroke, right?
Yeah.
Because he, very early in the episode, it feels like he kind of steels himself against having to go up against Deathstroke. And he, you know, he says he's not scared. And he needs to do this alone and all this kind of stuff, like you mentioned in the opening. But, you know, that's not true. I mean, it's obvious. And he's learned this lesson already in the series that he needs to rely on other people, and not kind of go after Deathstroke. Because if he does go after Deathstroke alone, I mean, it's a suicide mission, basically. I mean, he's sacrificing him. You know, he's going to take one for the team.
Right.
Which,
and you know, I think that's what Slade thinks he's gonna do. I think he knows that.
You think because Slade has had, because as Oliver mentions, Slade has had all this time to figure out what to do. He's set up plans within plans, and of course Oliver's just learned all this stuff, and he's trying to react to the fact that Slade's back. But Slade's been back for a long time and has set up all sorts of stuff. You think he's Slade has advanced all this, you know, these issues and plotted out where Oliver's going to go?
I don't know about this part of the plotting out. I mean, he's obviously plotted out everything, but I think he knows how important people are to Oliver. He knows how close he gets to them, how emotionally he is about them. And I think just the mere threat of his family and of Sarah, you know, of Deathstroke doing any harm to them, I think he knows that that will drive Oliver crazy. And I don't know that he's entirely counting on Oliver going for help. At least not right away. It's probably nothing he can't handle, but right. I think he knows that. I think he knows Oliver well enough.
Well, I mean, he hopefully would, you know, definitely know Oliver's weakness, and that does seem, you know, people... you know, and as with a lot of heroes, you know, it seems like their weakness is the fact that they have these connections with other people that are not as, you know, strong as the hero, right? So the hero feels that they have to protect everybody, and a lot of villains exploit those connections because it's a point of weakness. I mean, you know, you take someone's kid and, you know, you threaten their life or something like that, or, you know, their sister or their... Well, probably not the mom. He's dead show. Yeah. I'm going to kill your mom. And he'd probably be like,
he's
go
like,
ahead.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. She has casual.
Man, he's really mad at her.
Yeah, what did he say? She's got a casual alliance with the truth, I think is what he said at the end. So.
Oh, geez. Swimming. Was that an Aquaman reference?
That was
about the swimming.
If it was very, very thinly veiled.
Okay, all right, okay.
So anyway, I think that this, you know, the Suicide Squad could also be looked at as Oliver's group, right? Because they are in that mission. It's like maybe not everyone will survive because, you know, it's, you know, Diggle's looking after Felicity and Sarah's looking after Laurel and Roy's looking after Thea. Yeah, and no one's looking after the mom, so... Right, that's...
You know, I have a feeling that Malcolm Merlyn might be watching after her, but Oliver doesn't know that.
I keep forgetting about him.
He's got to
pop back in.
But in the shadows, still alive. Since you brought it up, I'm sure this probably wasn't deliberate, but speaking of another suicide mission there, Felicity telling Diggle to just go ahead and go?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty dangerous. I'm like, Felicity, honey, look. You're in your robe out front of your house, and you're sending away your only source of protection.
Right.
Well, but she's right, though. She's right. If Slade wanted to kill her, he would just do it. Diggle's
right.
not going to stop him.
Right.
So, but you know, still, sending him away. And she didn't seem nervous at all, did she?
She was very kind of flippant about it. I mean, you know, she was her normal kind of cheerful self. You know, marshmallows? And she's like, oh, no, I'm all out. You know, and it's just, she was just really candid with him. I thought that was a really sweet moment between Felicity and Diggle.
And to me, it truly felt like, okay, you know what? Felicity's job now is, you know, Arrow sidekick. I mean, that's her job. Like, she gets up in the morning and she's like, yeah, I got to go into the Arrow Cave. You know, I mean, it just felt like that's just who she has now decided who she is. You know, she's now comfortable in that position.
Were you able to tell, like, exactly what was on her pajamas?
No, I couldn't tell.
It looked like
I tried to look, trust me.
Like sports-related paraphernalia or something like that, but I was not sure. I couldn't tell if it was like it's supposed to be bunnies. Is it like an in joke? I don't know. I couldn't tell. So
yeah. Now I almost think I want to. I wonder if that was an Easter egg. Probably not. That would.
Yeah. Well, maybe there were Easter eggs on the.
Yeah. Is there funny. Easter jammies?
Easter jammies.
It's that time of year.
Yeah. Well, you know, what else do you wear when you have risen but your Easter jammies? You know. So, and then we've got Oliver dealing with the. With the Russian mob, I mean, that's, you know, there are suicide-related risks with that, I guess, too, so.
Well, he handles himself well when he's standing there talking to, what's the guy's name?
Alexei, yeah.
But, you know, and there's, what, some, you know, a few goons around him. But, I mean, the Russian mob's, I'm assuming, is a pretty powerful group.
I don't know how it's all structured, but if it, you know, it seems like not Vladimir, who the guy from the boat, who he had gone and seen in Russia. I mean, I assume that he's a higher, you know, ranking person than Alexei in some fashion. So, you know,
so you think he would forgive Oliver and his?
Yeah, I mean, he and Oliver have a complete understanding. I think Alexei. Tolerates. I mean, in previous episodes, it appears that Alexei only tolerates Oliver because he is part of the Brotherhood, the Bratva, as it is. Which I found out. I did a Google search. Bratva means brotherhood. So,
there you gotcha. Go. Okay. Not up on my.
It's not like it's not like a meat sausage or anything like that. It's like a it's a Bratva-wurst. Right,
it's a brotherhood. It's a meat sausage. It's two things in one.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Alexei's like the local Starling City. You know, he's the local chapter of the Bratva here in Starling City, and he kind of tolerates Oliver. But, you know, it's like, you know, if you're like the Loyal Order of the Water Buffalo and, you know, another brother comes to you and asks for something, well, you know, you do it, but you may not necessarily like him. And, of course, like Alexei, and it's like, well, you need to do for me. And Oliver's like, at this point, no, you work for me. You know, I know how this works, and you work for me.
You know, I almost thought at the end he was going to go back to him or just do what he wanted him to do.
After he got what he wanted, and he just said, okay, now.
Yeah, right. Just to say, you know, hey, look, I'm sorry, man. I was just, you know, hadn't had my coffee yet. No, I was having a bad day, whatever.
That would have been interesting, I think.
Well, just to kind of say, look, you know what? We're still cool. You know, we can still help each other in that. Because it would seem odd to kind of cut that that resource off.
Right.
But anyway, that was kind of a minor scene. But it struck me as I was watching it as he was talking to him, like, hey, man, what's he doing? He's crazy.
Oliver,
you know, I mean, like, he's playing in dangerous waters here, and I automatically thought, well, Suicide Squad, because, you know, I was trying to make that connection. But
yeah, that's cool.
Maybe not Suicide Squad, just a slightly painful Risk Squad in that one, maybe.
Well, it didn't end well for poor Alexei, so.
No.
Rip.
No.
Okay, the first of one of my many questions for the episode here. So how did Oliver get the bank account number? Because Alexei was handing him the paper, and they said, you know, if you take this, you know, we are through. You never come and ask anything. And Oliver just kind of grabs it and throws it down and walks away. And then Sarah meets him, and then they have a discussion. And then the next thing we know, Felicity is like, okay, well, here's the info on that bank account you wanted. And I'm like, what? Like he glanced at the paper. Like, we didn't even really see him look at it. And he, like, memorized his bank number, which I don't know about your bank number, but mine is, like, 20 or 30 digits. It's not just something you can memorize like that, I think. But I don't know.
It took me about 4 years to memorize mine. I don't know. That was another one of those convenience things, you know, like, maybe he went back and got it. I don't know. Maybe he, like, waited until they all went back inside and grabbed it. You suppose he left it on the ground after he
surfaced? Yeah, it's like, oh, we'll just leave that laying around. We won't clean it up or something. I mean, it just...
Pick that up later. Go get some ice questions for your head. that was one of those... Would you consider that a continuity error or just a... It's one of those things that kind of, I mean, it's almost like
it's a partial scripting error, possibly. It's partially a directing error, maybe, because you have a character do something and you don't come back to it. But, you know, maybe it was scripted that he was, it's like, throws it down, then he was supposed to pick it up, but they just forgot. I mean, it could be a continuity error. Maybe they shot another, you know, piece, another scene or a shot or something, and they just didn't have it, you know, because there were those extra scenes that were on the season one DVD, and maybe him going back to get the paper is one of them.
Yeah, or getting it in a different way, maybe. So, and I'm not trying to be flippant here, but isn't there usually a person in charge of watching things like that, you know, in a movie? Like if somebody puts a glass down and then in the next scene he has the glass, so isn't that called a gaffer? Isn't that what?
No, gaffer is someone that tapes down the cables, does cabling and stuff.
Oh.
It would be a continuity person or a script supervisor.
Okay.
Someone like
all
that.
Right. Okay, well. Hmm.
So, but you know,
again, guess they were on break that day.
Yeah, there's so many things that go into, you know, putting a television show together that, you know, stuff slips by. So, while we're talking about Oliver, I just want to touch on this again, where we were basically talking about Oliver's denial about everything like that, and the fact that, you know, he's continuing to push people away throughout. Well, not just people, mostly it's Sarah, and you know, she finally points something out to him. It's like, whether you and I are sleeping together or a couple, Slade knows that he can get to you through me. So even if you push me away, it's not going to make a difference. You know, it's one of these just kind of silly things that, you know, I think, you know, it's probably just being a guy, right? He's not really thinking about it. It's like, I got to protect you. I got to push you back. And she's like, you know, he knows we know each other, right? He's not going to forget that just because you're not actively dating me. Oh, look, he changed his Facebook status. It says it's complicated, so.
Oh, I guess I can't chase her anymore.
Can't kill her, so.
I can picture Destro checking Facebook. This is.
Well, you've seen those. There's someone.
Oliver is at Verdant.
Yeah. Why? He's always there. I didn't see him in there. That's weird. It says he checked in. There's someone that's done. I think it's a website called Superhero Tweets, and or Superhero Texts. It's basically like you know, Batman texting Superman, and it's, you know, it's just the back and forth. It's funny stuff. I should check and see if anyone's done a Green Arrow one, but anyway, you know. And so then, you know, Sarah talks to him, and then Laurel talks to him, and man, it's like, wow, what's Laurel been doing her 12-step program for probably a couple weeks now? And boy, she's all over it. She's looking for a new job. She's offering advice. She's going out to, you know, meals with her family.
Yeah. Turns out the sarcastic alcoholic advice was the best one given in this whole episode.
So, I mean, really, she said, oh, it's just the, what is the AA, you know, honesty talking or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, no, I mean, that's what you need, I think, at this point in the episode. Is she is the most candid person in this episode. She doesn't dance around any of the issues. She just kind of cuts straight to the heart of it and tells Oliver what he already knows. Again, that's the problem. Oliver has already gone through this where he had previously pushed Diggle away and he had pushed Felicity away. And I can't have all these people knowing my identity and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, it's like they're already in, man. It's they want to be there. They are helping you. That's how this whole thing in life works. Like, it's about the connections that you make.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what they're trying to say with the episode, at least.
I think so, too. I think they need to stop using Oliver to tell that message. You know, maybe Roy or something. Because at this point, Oliver needs to know that they're committed, that they're not going anywhere, that he doesn't always need to be the one to protect them. You know what I'm saying?
He's needy.
He is. I mean, you don't. And I don't mean to compare this to Batman, but I'm going to real quick. But you never see Batman like really worrying about anybody else so much, you know? I mean, he does what he needs to do, and he's like, you know, they're trained. They can do
this. I'm sorry, like, Commissioner Gordon. I'm afraid if I do this that you're going to get shot.
So that was really, really, really good Batman imitation.
Oh, thank you. I too have a little bit of a cold, and it's very easy to do the new Christian Bale version of Batman. So.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I prefer Green Arrow to Batman. We've talked about this many times, but he needs to kind of just get over that. I've got to do everything. I've got to save the world kind of attitude, which he kind of had a little bit of that this time. And Laurel, you know, slap some sense into him with her candor. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of a reversal, right? Because Oliver was the one that was painfully and brutally honest with her 3 or 4 episodes ago.
Right.
About their relationship and about her destructive behavior and stuff like that. And, you know, and maybe we'll look back at this entire season and see, you know, this is what Oliver's arc was for this season. You know, it was him realizing that he needs to have other individuals around him, that he does care about people and foster those relationships and that kind of stuff.
Yep, which I thought he had realized until the big shocking surprise at the end, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay, yeah.
I thought I knew exactly who he was going to go to for help. I was wrong.
Yes. Yeah, he, you know, when he's like, I got to see an old friend, it's like, oh, of course, I know who he's going to go. I thought he was actually, well, okay, we'll talk about that in a minute, because I want to get some more stuff. Yeah.
That's the end. That's our climactic conclusion.
Dun,
okay.
Dun. all right, so let's get into basically what I think the meat of this episode was. So Oliver actually took the B storyline this week, and the A storyline was Diggle and Suicide Squad. So let's talk a little bit about their mission here.
Okay. Now you have some questions and concerns as we work through here, and I think I have some answers.
I'm kind of jumping around here with a bunch of different things, and some of these are questions, just to posit questions, because I think there were some interesting aspects. As we mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show, I really like what they did with Diggle. I thought I enjoyed his characterization and some of the philosophical and moral questions that were brought up. I mean, you know, by having something that's blatantly called the Suicide Squad. I mean, in show, it's Amanda Waller's Task Force X, right? But as Deadshot points out, it's like, let's just call it what it is. It's the Suicide Squad, right? So,
right.
You know, which is great, because it shows how, you know, he's just so flippant about it. It's like, you know what? I'm already in jail. Worst you can do is kill me now. You know, it's like he thinks
they're going to do anyway.
Sure. And why wouldn't you? I mean, it's like, you're going to send me on a job that you're not expecting me to come back from. And the whole plan was for him not to come back from the job anyway, as we find out that he was going to be the target. So I got some questions about that. But first, as I was watching the episode again, knowing what happens, so they're going after this guy, Kadir. He's got this nerve agent that they've discovered, that Argus, which is the secret espionage group of the DC universe, very much like S.H.I.E.L.D. is in the Marvel universe. So Argus finds out this guy, Kadir, who besides selling drugs, terrorism, and sex trafficking, which I was surprised they didn't actually go, you know, get into, is like, you know, underage prostitution in there or something like that as well. He also happens to manufacture nerve gas. Not just, he's not just moving it, he's making it. So Waller is briefing Diggle and Lila on this in her little bunker, you know, room, the command room and stuff that she's got. And she puts up the video of a giant vat of nerve gas. Meanwhile, the entire rest of the episode, everyone's sitting around going, all right, so we'll just pocket the nerve gas. We'll get in, we'll pocket the nerve gas, we'll get out, and then we'll be cool. I'm like, Waller didn't say anything about it. You know, she didn't point it out, but the video that you saw at the beginning of the episode was this giant vat of nerve gas. Diggle was looking at it. He's not an idiot. What's going on there? Maybe they were thinking that was a different, you know, image of nerve gas or something. I don't know. I'm not asking. I mean, I'm not
maybe
asking.
Thought it was a really close up photo. Yeah. Maybe.
And I'm not asking you to defend it. It's just one of those things.
I don't have a defense of that one.
Stands at, right. I'm not. Yeah, I don't think there's a way. Anyway, so you know, everybody was all surprised at the end when, guys, we got what we call a little situation here. Well, it's a big situation, and Waller knew. I mean, that's the whole point was that Waller knew and she didn't tell anybody, but. Diggle should have been able to kind of see that, but I don't know. It seemed very weird about the way they called him in. Like, I hadn't even really thought about this before either, but Waller goes to get Lila at this sex suite that they've got, and is kind of surprised, I guess, to see Diggle, but invites him along, but doesn't really invite him along. It's this passive-aggressive sort of, come with me, and she's talking to Lila because they had been having a conversation, and then she's like, Wait. Okay, John, I'll see you later, and John's like, okay, and Waller's like, no, I meant both of you. It's like, what, you weren't addressing him.
I see what you're saying. So, like, it didn't look like she was talking to him in the first place.
Right. I mean, she's just staring at Lila and going back and forth like, oh, I see you've availed yourself of the suite. Well, we've got some work to do. You know, come with me. And John's like, all right, see you later. And she's like, no, I was talking to you too. It's like, what? It seemed to really just kind of...
Maybe she's just got really bad social skills. You know, she doesn't look at the person she's talking to.
Well, she does have some... Yeah, she does have some poor social skills in it. So, which I think is great because Deadshot calls... it's Diggle calls her on it. You know, he's saying that the hired hitman, you know, Deadshot showed more compassion than the woman leading the operation, which I think is great. I mean, it's a great characterization for Waller, even if this is not really the characterization of Waller that I'm used to from the comic books. It's close enough, but I'm not sure that the actress pulls it off completely.
She was still scary, though.
She is kind of scary. I mean, she's tough, but she's scary. She's not scary in an intimidating, like, in the comic books, for those of you who have not read any of the comics with Amanda Waller in it, and it's some of the Justice League and Suicide Squad stories from the mid-80s. She is a large black woman, not very tall. So she doesn't appear to be intimidating, but she is very intimidating. The one panel that I always remember of her is from a Justice League. She's standing screaming at Batman. She's about a foot shorter than him. So she's looking up. Batman's looking down. She's wagging her finger in his face, telling off Batman. I mean, it's like, who tells off Batman? Well, she's got the balls to do it. And that's, you know, that's kind of where her character is. And in this, you know, she's this very thin, very sexy person. And she just doesn't have the gravitas, the intimidation, the physical intimidation that I feel Waller should have.
She would be a lot more scary if she was a bigger woman. I will admit that.
Right, so. And Pam Grier, I thought, did a better job in Smallville playing Waller because she is she's a little bit older, and B, she's a little heavier just as she's gotten older. So I thought she did a good job. And then the people that fans online really would like to see is the voice actress that did Waller for the DC animated Justice League and Justice League Unlimited cartoons, whose name is escaping me now, but she would make a great Waller. You know, because she's an actress as well as a voice actress, she'd do a really good job of Waller. But anyway, so there's a part where Diggle then, so he, you know, he accepts that he'll go on this mission, even though, again, this is kind of like, I guess I'm having trouble suspending my disbelief through this episode, because is it just he wants to hang out with his ex-wife slash new girlfriend, Lila? Because it's like, you know, oh, hey, we're a super secret government organization and we need you to do a job for us. And he's like, okay. What? So,
yeah, and I kind of bought that more just because of the connection with Lila.
Yeah.
And I mean, just I think because they've worked together and the things that they have done together throughout their life, knowing each other, you know, all the way back in, you know, the army or like whatever they were in.
Yeah, it was Afghanistan, and yeah, look, I think that they were in the army there. So
right, so I think that's why he went with her, and mm-hmm. and knowing what she does, and they, yeah, I mean, I kind of bought that. I didn't mind it, but I do think it had something to do with him being with Lila. If he wasn't with her, and Amanda Waller just showed up, he was by himself, I don't necessarily think he would have gone willingly. They probably just would have convinced him with another knockout dart or something. But
right. Oh, that's right, yeah. And so, but I guess Diggle, you know, he goes along with this, even though he appears to have some pretty strong moral and ethical reservations about the group as he finds mm-hmm. out more, yet he still kind of continues to go on with this. So, again, uh-huh. little suspension of disbelief. He meets the people that, so, you know, he's going to be, first off, he thinks it's just him and Lila, right? That, and Lila is not correcting him on this at that point. He thinks it's kind of just a, you know, get in, get out sort of mission. And Waller says, no, you're taking your team. And then he finds out his team includes these three villains that they have fought in the past, including the guy that killed his brother, who he thinks accidentally killed his brother. But last time we met him, Deadshot revealed that, no, you know, his brother was the target, which we don't have a lot of, you know, there's not much more to the backstory that we've gotten from that. So Diggle has a big problem with that, but he still continues to go into it. and there's Lila pointing out that, well, these guys, you know, these people in jail and Deadshot and stuff like that, they're not much different than what Oliver and Sarah do, you know, I mean, in terms of like killing people. And Diggle goes to defend
his
friends.
Well, no, that's what she says.
Right. She says,
I mean,
there's not much difference.
That's what Lila says.
Right. And he defends his friends. He says, no, there is a difference. So right, what I want to ask you is what, like, how Deadshot is versus how Canary and Arrow are, is there a difference to what they do?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe there is. And I'm not saying that either one is right, but I do think that there's a stronger sense of morals, I guess, to what, you know, Oliver and his team do.
So I even if we go back to season one, where Oliver was killing some of these people in the book, because he did kill some of them, several of them he just incapacitated for the cops to get away with. But there were a couple that he killed. You know, there's basically, he was hiring himself out as a hitman to eliminate these people that had made these business deals that were destroying his city. Whereas, you know, Deadshot, you know, he's basically a killer for hire. What's the... I'm just curious your thoughts on this. I mean, I'm not.
No, I would agree there. I don't think that is much different.
Okay.
But now I think it's different. And
okay.
Again, not saying it's right. I'm not saying that it's right. And what he has done, you know, realistically, he should really be accountable for the murders that he's committed, because he really
and
has.
And I think I think Oliver would agree with you on that.
I do too. I do too. And that's the difference right there. That's one of the differences, is that, you know, he would admit that that's not right. Even of him, that's not right. Okay. And I think that there is some restraint. I think
with
that
Oliver?
With Oliver, yeah.
Okay.
With what Argus is doing, I think it's pretty much in order to achieve their goal, they'll pretty much do whatever they need to.
It's kind of the television version of people's idea of the large government spy agency that, you know, they are overreaching their bounds. We don't know what they're doing. It's all in secret. They're, you know, they are working on people's deepest fears. It's all about lying, you know, to the public and stuff like this, subterfuge, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and I would argue that in this episode, they were opposites in a lot of ways. Okay. I mean, Argus has their Suicide Squad. That's exactly what it was. They picked these people, these criminals, because if they lost them, or when they intentionally lost them, like it looked like maybe they had intended, that's fine. It was all worth it. Whereas on the other side of that, you know, that B storyline, Oliver was doing everything he could to protect everybody he knew by himself.
Yeah.
And he was willing to sacrifice himself in order to do that. And that's, I mean, that's
as opposed to Waller
opposite.
Sacrificing everybody that she worked with.
Yeah,
that's
because
a great point.
Because she could. So that's the difference. So is it right? No, it's not right.
Yeah.
Vigilantism, you know, it isn't right. It isn't pretty. It's doing a dirty job that the law and the moral people of the world aren't seemingly capable of doing.
Okay, so that leads me into my next question. I believe it's Deadshot that mentions honor in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to have a very honorable sort of existence in this episode, which I don't want to say that he is out of character from how we've seen him before. We just, because we haven't really gotten enough of him.
Sure.
But you know, there's, you know, if he was really just some cold hearted killer, you know, he had the opportunity to kill Diggle at one point and do a number of things. But, you know, he is trying to actually save Diggle. And he's like, you know what, I'm supposed to stay here. You get out. And, you know, he talks about honor. So I look at these characters and, you know, it putting the, you know, putting the A storyline and the B storyline back to back like that, it shows us. You know, the honor between Oliver and Diggle and Deadshot, and it shows us how much or the lack of honor that I think that Amanda Waller has too, because as you say, you know, she doesn't want to get her hands dirty. She doesn't want to get Argus's hands dirty. They're doing this all undercover, and she's totally upset when they blow it, you know, and expose something that wasn't supposed to be exposed. That really upsets her. Plus, she's also willing just to, you know, use individuals and use them up. You know, it's not like tit for tat. It's not like what the Bratva wanted, right? So we kind of go back to that part of the storyline where Alexei is like, okay, you do me a favor, I do you a favor, you do me a favor. Whereas what we're seeing with Waller, it's like, okay, you do me a favor, and you keep doing me favors. And then I'm going to terminate you when I choose to. I find you know, this whole notion of honor in the storyline really interesting. And Diggle was really struggling with that, I think, as you see through the flashbacks to Afghanistan and how to deal with Kadir, because he feels like Diggle feels like he did something wrong in saving Kadir's life in just to have him come back and then all of a sudden, you know, be this kind of terrorist person producing bioweapons that, who knows? I mean, Argus, you know, they wanted to blow it up, but maybe, you know, they wanted to also get in and get some of the stuff out too. You know, who knows? You know, you don't know what is going on with them, which is also, you know, dishonorable, I think.
Well, I think the word honor is being used fairly loosely here. I don't think it's honor that we're talking about. With Diggle, what is presented as honor, I think, is more duty. He was doing his duty in Afghanistan and he wasn't just saving Kadir. He was saving anybody he could that was being attacked in that group. It looked like they were taking some refugees, maybe, and then
right.
His,
and at least one of his teammates went down in the firefight.
Yeah. Did they really clear that up? Was he dead or just injured?
They just kind of dragged a body out of the way. An American soldier that was shot, apparently. So
I would say, and I would say there's definitely honor involved there, mm-hmm. but overall what they're, you know, comparing that to and using that to compare to some of the other characters mm-hmm. is more duty than honor. Now, when you talk about Deadshot, I think he truly believes what he's doing is honor and honorable. But in
well,
because
he's doing it for his he talks about he's doing it for his daughter, right?
Right. But what he's doing for his daughter is he's killing people that others hire him to kill, or in this case, are forcing him to kill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I get it.
So what I think he's doing more is he's got a sense of guidelines, you know, more than honor. Because he won't kill anybody that he hasn't been paid to kill.
I was going
to
say, that's why he didn't kill Diggle. Right. I was thinking that earlier. He didn't kill Diggle because he's not getting paid for that.
That's right. And even when he told him about his brother, he didn't kill Diggle's brother because he missed. He never misses, right?
Right.
He was paid to do that, and now he's doing that because he's good at it, and people will pay him money, and he can give that money to his daughter. He feels a sense of, I guess, duty, right, to his daughter, and so. But again, that's not honor, okay? And even what Oliver is doing, you know, has maybe more a sense of honor than some of the other examples, but mm-hmm. even that is not honor. Honor, the definition of honor is honesty, fairness, integrity, all of those things. And they're doing some of those things, but not all of them.
Interesting. I appreciate that, Josh. I think that's a good distinction to bring up. And I do think that that does make sense in the light of the different storylines that we're seeing here.
Right. But like all good characters, good and bad, I mean, like all quality characters, both mm-hmm. good guys and bad guys, right?
Right.
What they think they're doing may not really be reality, you know?
Right.
I mean, most bad guys
just because a character
don't.
Says something doesn't make it so, because the character is just not infallible in terms of knowledge and stuff like that. So
right. I mean, a lot of bad guys throughout history thought they were doing the right thing.
Right.
So
right.
Well, I got little teacherly there with the vocabulary. So
you schooled me, man. So all right. So I got a couple other kind of taking me out of the action questions here. So back when we first go to Markovia, which, by the way, I don't know if you got the name of the town in Markovia, but it's Markovsburg, I think is
Markovsburg.
And I'm like, really? What? I didn't know there was such a town in. Markovia is Markovia, right? It's just always it's Markovia, and the
Markovsburg is the best thing they could do. Is there like a Markovsville?
There's New Markovia. It's so nice they had to name it twice. I don't know. So they go to this public art auction to do this fake meetup with Kadir, which I thought was very clever. They set it up that Diggle is, you know, there, and he's got Bronze Tiger as his bodyguard, which I thought was a nice turn for the whole thing. And then Deadshot was going to fake an assassination attempt and scare Kadir into, you know, reconnecting with Diggle. And Deadshot fires the gun. Oh, that and by the way, that's where Deadshot points out that it's honor that's keeping him, because Diggle says, well, what's to keep him from killing me right now? And Deadshot says it's honor, right? Because that it would be dishonorable to kill your part, you know, to kill someone you're working with, I guess, and especially
that he
shoot
wasn't
him in
supposed
the back.
To kill.
And that he wasn't supposed to kill, that he's not getting paid for, and shoot him in the back, because that's the position he was. Anyway, so he takes the shot. Of course, he never misses. So Bronze Tiger goes down like he was shot, but then there's also a bullet hole in Diggle's jacket, you know. But we see Bronze Tiger up later, so he was faking getting shot. But still, it's this public art auction. This guy gets shot on the catwalk or on the bridge or whatever it is there, and no one comes to his aid. We go to commercial, and we, you know, it just washed over. It's like, what the heck is going on with that? So, again, I just found that as kind of a strange...
It did occur to me, too. I mean, you know, Bronze Tiger wouldn't care because that was his job. That's why he was there. But
right. And,
I'm like, wow.
You know, no. Boom, the shot goes off, the glass shatters, and it's like he just goes down. But it seemed like the way he went down made it seem like he got shot. And
yeah.
Maybe he didn't get shot because, of course, the bullet went through Diggle's jacket. So, but also, if he's a bodyguard and he wasn't shot, why would he not try to protect Diggle? Like, the first thing you would think, the bodyguard would, like, he hears the shot go off or whatever, and he would jump onto the guy he was supposed to protect. But, you know,
right, but I mean, but he was the one that was supposedly, you know, getting shot, so he went down right away,
I
right?
Guess. Yeah, that's how I read it, but it just again, in the moment, it's like
it kind of made you feel sorry for fake bodyguard.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I mean, and it seemed to work in the moment because it accomplished what the goal of the scene was, like from
Kadir, who thought he was the one getting shot, he didn't go, hey, that guy's down, or somebody check the bodyguard.
Right. It's like, oh, good thing. Glad they shot him instead of me. Whatever. So, I don't know. Anyway, and then another piece, again, on this whole mission at the end when, so they send Deadshot in to be the eye on the vat, you know, this giant vat, exactly what Waller knew was there because she had this all planned out. So she uses the little camera in his eyepiece, which, why did she not just use that later when they were escaping in the van to see what was going on? It's like, if you've got that, why not be using it all the time to see what's happening with the team? And then you'd find out that everyone's plotting against you or, you know, doing not what you've told them to do. Anyway, she uses him as the homing beacon for this drone strike with these Hellfire missiles or whatever they were called. And but he doesn't realize that, so they run away. And, of course, the missiles start following him. Well, why go through all that trouble? Why not just have, okay, Deadshot, are you standing in front of the tank? And he's like, yep, I see it. And she's like, all right, let's check the camera. Okay, yep. Then she turns on her little computer and goes, boop, and pushes the button. Why not just blow him up right there? That would take care of it too, wouldn't it? It would accomplish two goals. It would take out your agent.
I actually thought of that.
Okay.
That when I watched it, I'm like, oh, I bet that's what they're going to do. But then I thought, I mean, because Diggle said something about the drones bringing those, would you say, Hellfire missiles or something, take the whole building down. I don't know that the explosive that was in, you know, the members of Suicide Squad, I don't know that it was powerful enough to take that out.
It blew up a car, and, I mean, it presumably blew up a car when shrapnel went up. And there was this giant plume of smoke that you could see over a building. It's not just like it went, you know, and just...
Sure.
Like in the S.H.I.E.L.D. episode earlier in the season where something went off in someone's head and their eye just twitched to the side. You know, they were dead, but it didn't blow their body up.
Right. I mean, and that's assuming they couldn't put a bigger bomb in there or something like that. But to me, it even felt like that just wouldn't have been that big. And
I don't know.
I got to point this out now since you said something about shrapnel. I'm still not convinced, but a little more now than I was before. But I wasn't really convinced that he actually died.
Well, yeah, we didn't see a body, right? So
yeah, I mean,
all it said was terminated on her computer screen. That could mean anything, right? He's a... I hadn't even gone into this line of thinking because I had so many other things that I had problems with for the episode. But yes, he's an expert in explosives, is he not?
Yes.
So
yes, he is.
They put a bomb in his head. Pfft, that's child's play, right?
And, well, a couple things there. Number one, I mean, they didn't even use him. I mean, why was he even there?
Well, he was supposed to drive Deadshot away from wherever it was, but that was...
Bomb expert is supposed to be the driver. They couldn't get just anybody for that.
Well, Jason Statham was busy. I have a very set of skills.
That also might explain why there was a plume of smoke. Maybe the bomb went off outside his head. I'm not sure there would have been a big plume of smoke inside his head.
I don't know.
Now I've got a really bad image.
I would really hope, again, there was no body, so we can't confirm anything. I would really hope shrapnel's alive because it would do two things. One, it gives the character a great excuse to come back to join up with the other members of the squad or other members of the squad at the time, whatever, to go against Waller, right? Because it's like, you tried to kill me. I mean, that's a great like motivation piece for the character. But it also brings Sean Mayer back to the show. Uh-huh. And, you know, since Firefly went off the air, I miss seeing these guys. So I enjoyed
seeing
that.
He played the character pretty well. I would like to see him again. So, and like I said, they underutilized him. I mean, they could have picked some other smaller, minor character and actor to use instead, but mm-hmm. they used him. So I think he's still alive. That's my theory on him.
I was really hoping for Killer Croc.
Some guy with a skin condition.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I got we're running low on time, so I got one other question, and then I got one other thing we want to get to. So Oliver goes to... He finds out where Deathstroke is, very kind of anticlimactically. Goes in, you know, busts into his office, and there's a projector running, and he goes over to spin the chair around, and Alexei's dead, you know, stabbed through the eye with an arrow. The irony is not lost on us, Oliver. But there's this video playing, and Oliver turns around and looks at it, and I'm like, dude, don't just stand there staring at the video, because Deathstroke's going to come out and like, ha! Jump on him or something. That's what I was afraid was going to happen. But there's,
he should have. He had a perfect chance.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, again, that might not be honorable, and that's not what the promise was about, right? The promise was to destroy all of Oliver's relationships and make him miserable, or not miserable,
oh,
but
right.
It was make him whatever. Anyway, where did this video of, or this film of Shadow come from? It's like, it had to have been shot prior to her death on the island, so, you know, more than 5 years ago.
I'd say prior to the island at all.
Yeah, I mean, it did kind of look, it looked like it was not on the island. I mean, I didn't see Slade running around with a camcorder, you know, in season one. So what?
Yeah, that really threw me off. I'm like, wait a minute. At first I'm like, that's not Shadow. That is Shadow.
I didn't believe it was Shadow in bed at the beginning. I was like, is that I kept having to rewind and my DVR and like turn my head and go, is that Shadow? In the dead dream part at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Very first scene there. Well I have an answer for you.
Okay.
It's not that satisfying of an answer for me, because as I was watching the show, it took me, you know, I had to research this in order to find the answer to that.
You shouldn't have to do that, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, you shouldn't have to, unless you're looking for, you know, minor stuff, but this was big. I found this from comicbook.com, and they actually checked with Mark Guggenheim, executive producer, and he said that it is Shadow, it is a home movie, but it was taken by Yao Fei.
Okay.
Which, you know, I guess Slade probably got, I don't know, from maybe he went to Yao Fei's house. You know, he could have done that at any point after Oliver thought he was
he
dead.
Gets off the island. Right. At some point he gets off the island and he's so, you know, mesmerized with everything Shadow at this point. And, yeah, he finds out where she lived and goes and
so
ransacked.
Went and found some home movies that her dad took. So anyway, that's confirmed with Mark Guggenheim. So that's actually what that is. So
okay.
Now at least we all know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, thanks for finding that. You said that was from comicbook.com?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, okay, final thing I want to get to here. Holy backstory. Wait a second. So, Oliver goes to talk to his old friend, and that old friend happens to be this hot young woman that runs Argus, Amanda Waller. And wait, she knows that Slade Wilson was killed on the island? What? And I was like, wait a second, wait, time out. So I stopped. I mean, I rewound and watched that scene again. And then I went to Wikipedia and looked up from when what episodes we saw Amanda Waller, and I'm like, wait, did we know this? What? This scene threw me for the biggest loop. Very confusing. And I mean, and usually when I get those reveals at the end, it's like, oh, I didn't see that coming. But this one, I don't know if it was the way that it was staged or what she
said. It was stated very matter of fact, like we should have known.
Like we should know. Right. That's what it was, I guess, is that it was like, oh, yeah, of course. It's like, yo, he can't be dead. I'm like, you are talking like I should know what you guys are talking about. That's what it was. And I'm like, get out of town. So what is, was she on the island? Was she on the boat? Are we going to get her, Island Waller? Maybe she was a big fat woman on the island and then she lost a lot of weight because.
Well, that would explain that.
Right.
See, that takes care of that continuity right there.
Bazinga.
It's going to be Pam Grier. See, she's going to come back as Island.
Island Waller?
Waller, yeah. I got no answer for you, but obviously that's going to come back in a story. So I think we'll get some of those answers
soon. We're down to like, what, 7 episodes, I guess, before the end of the season. So, you know, I would assume they're going to – they seem to do a pretty good job of wrapping up questions within the season. I don't think that, you know, would be something that – I mean, they may get to more of it and then realize that, oh, there is a bigger story that we're going to find out in a later season for this. But hopefully we'll get a little bit more of her. I haven't heard of the actress that plays Waller. I haven't heard about her doing, you know, any cameos in upcoming episodes or anything like that. But, you know, they don't always tell us everything in advance.
Well, they're setting up tons of stuff that I don't think they're going to get to this season. But it'll always kind of be in the back of the – you know, back shadows there with Merlin.
Yeah, I know.
Ready to call on.
Yeah. So, okay, I've got one final, you know, question that you don't have to answer, but it's just you got raised.
I don't know the answer.
Okay. Things that make you go, hmm. Okay, so Argus, who knows that Kadir tried to buy the prototype earthquake machine, which is what Bronze Tiger was stealing, I don't know, you know, several episodes ago, and that he also was manufacturing this nerve agent, right? They know all this stuff where he lives and what it looks like and all this. They've got all this intel. Yet there is some mercenary that is running around the world killing people, making a beeline from wherever it is to Starling City. They call him Deathstroke, and they don't put together that is Slade Wilson. I do not buy that. I do not buy that at all. Because Amanda Waller was definitely shocked that Slade was still alive. And,
oh, yes.
Oh, and by the way,
she didn't even believe him.
We've got this guy we've been following called Deathstroke. It's like, how can you not see that those are the same person? I mean,
well, especially if she was on the island. If she ended up being on the island or the boat, she should have known that.
She should have known that, right.
They had a picture of him. Which wasn't a very flattering picture, by the way.
Right, yeah.
Made him look kind of fat.
It's taken from below.
Do I look fat in this mask?
If you're going to... Boy, it's hot in here. You always need to shoot down for, you know, have an upward angle, you know, downward angle instead of an upward angle with him because the costume, it adds 10 pounds. So
absolutely.
Anyway, just another weird thing. And again, as I pointed out, this episode just raised so many questions, not really in-universe questions, but just kind of like, well, that they should have been able to figure that out and tell us in a, you know, from the story perspective, they should have fixed that or something. So, I don't know. It was, like I said, parts of the episode were satisfying, but overall, I kind of give this like a C+, I think.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and give it a B-.
Okay.
And for the sole reason of I agree with all the things you said, but it gave us tons of stuff to talk about, and it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And there's a bunch of references here, and I want to just get to these real quick before we skip off. So Diggle was called the Ostrander Hotel, which is named after the Suicide Squad co-creator John Ostrander, who has been a writer for comic books – for I don't know, like 30 years now. He wrote Suicide Squad. He's written a number of other characters for DC. He's also written the Star Wars Legacy series for Dark Horse. All-around cool guy. As soon as I saw that reference, I hopped onto his Facebook page, and people were already commenting on the fact about the reference, which he didn't know was coming because he was in the dark about the episode as anybody else, but he was really pleased to see the shout-out. And then also another name check was there was a crime that was being committed at 5th and Giffen, which is Giffen was named a street named after DC artist and writer Keith Giffen, who's worked with tons of different characters, including Deathstroke and Legion of Superheroes, and your favorite character and mine, the comedy. Oh, jeez.
Heckler?
The Heckler, yes.
The Heckler. Oh, yay.
Also Ambush Bug. So Keith Giffen's got a really weird sense of humor there, so. And then they name-checked a bunch of different DC countries that are, you know, made-up countries because they don't actually talk about Afghanistan. I mean, if they do talk about Afghanistan, it's not it's not where bad guys are from, right? They never reference, like, North Korea or anything like that. They have an Asian country that they use for when they need bad guys to be, you know, come from Asia. So here we got Kandak, which is a Middle Eastern country, as is Karak, Q-U-R-A-C, and also Markovia, which we've talked about before on the show. We also mentioned that Task Force X was Waller's code name for the group, even though they call themselves the Suicide Squad. In the comics, Task Force X is also the broader organization that oversees the Suicide Squad, as well as a couple other secret groups, one called Checkmate and also one called Argent. Did you catch Harley Quinn cameo?
Yes, and I was looking for it, and they didn't do much in the actual episode, but it was actually a really good one. I liked it.
Yeah, it was great, and I found out that I saw this posted online, so I can't verify it because I didn't see anything in the credits, but Tara Strong, who voiced Harley Quinn on some of the recent Batman episodes, or some of the recent DC, you know, universe cartoons and stuff like that. She actually did the voice for Harley, and they had some other actress, you know, in the cell. But you really only saw like part of her hair, I think, really.
Yeah.
So
It really did sound like the cartoon. I thought of that when I heard it. I thought maybe they were just trying to do that, but it was actually her.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And so that was pretty cool. When Oliver found the Deathstroke mask on the roof, that was a direct call out to a panel from Identity Crisis, which is a storyline we've talked about prior on the show here, where Green Arrow shoves an arrow actually into the eye socket of Deathstroke to keep him from, you know, killing some people they were working with. In that story, Deathstroke actually left his mask with the arrow shoved back through it with a note on it for Oliver saying, "This is yours, we're not done," which is basically what Slade is doing to Oliver here. He's basically calling him out and saying, you know, all right, I'm in town, you know, this is it, come get me, because that was the same setup as what we saw on the island in the premiere episode. And finally, I am embarrassed to tell you this, that I did not catch the Star Wars reference in this until the second time I watched the episode. But I was so focused on all the other stuff that we were just talking about. So there was you caught this, I'm assuming, right?
I am, but don't feel any shame in not noticing this second time. There's so much in it that it's okay. It's okay. I knew you'd get it eventually.
Okay. All right. So when they're in the basement, when Diggle and Deadshot are in the basement, and there are two of the guards come running in, and Deadshot blasts them with his little wrist gauntlet thing. He says, "That's two, you owe me, Junior," which is a direct shout out to Han Solo's line to Luke Skywalker in the first Star Wars. So thought that was really cool.
Nice.
And also wanted to give a quick shout out to Sean Johnson, who just found out about the podcast, and he wanted to thank us. He said, "I finally found a worthy Arrow podcast, one where awesome hosts actually discuss the episode in a thoughtful manner, along with some entertainment." And, you know, he really loves puns. So I wish we had some good puns on the show today. But
well, I hope he loves 80s references, too. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah. I actually have a little saying about puns, is that a pun at maturity is fully grown. G-R-O-A-N. So, anyway, I'll leave us with that tonight. And, boy, that has been a chocked full episode of Green Justice here, definitely.
I had a lot of fun. There was so much to talk about. I could keep going, actually, but I restrained myself.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. So, we hope to, and it's great because we'll be back next week. So, we hope to see you all then.
If you enjoyed this episode, please, we want to see some feedback on iTunes. I love seeing that great feedback. And you can also contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com or Twitter at greenjusticepod or our Facebook page, facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And you can also check out the other show that Josh and I host, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is also here on randomchatter.com. We're in a slight hiatus on that one for another couple weeks, but you can catch any of our back episodes on the website. And, of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed the city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.